Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be with you on the afternoon drive. On the show today, it's going to be the best of Drive Time Sports. That's how we're going to start off this brand new week. We're going to mix things up a little bit and bounce all the way around. We're going to talk about three different, completely different topics. First off, it was about 2 weeks ago we said goodbye to a boxing legend in Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And we had our boxing insider, Tony Whippy. He's joined the show since its inception. 10 years ago, we've had Tony on the show. So we talked about the career of Hagler. And we also talked about the good news coming out of boxing, and that's that the biggest fight in the world of the sport is on the verge of happening. And that is Tyson Fury going up against Anthony Joshua. I can't wait for it. It's been so long since we've had a heavyweight fight of this magnitude. This even goes beyond Fury and Wilder. So that was a lot of fun. We're going to replay that segment. And also, we're going to replay a segment that we had with Tom Wolfe, who was an author. He wrote a book called The Called Shot. It's about the 1932 baseball season. Some fascinating stuff there. Of course, it highlights Babe Ruth. Did he actually call a shot? I guess historically, that is one of the biggest debated topics, and if Babe Ruth actually called a shot. We talked to Tom Wolfe about that. And we were also joined by Martin Rooney. You may not recognize the name, but Martin Rooney is world-renowned. He coaches everything. He is an athletic trainer, and he's also a life coach. He's a coach's coach. He wrote a book, and the foreword was by Phil Simms. And I really enjoyed this interview. I really enjoyed the book. It was called Coach to Coach, is what it was called. And I just thought it was a great interview. We did this one during the COVID time, so it was a great, positive, uplifting segment, and I want to play that as well. That's what we have coming up on this best edition of Drive Time Sports. Three segments you're really going to enjoy if you miss them. And if you heard them, you'll listen to them again and enjoy them, I promise. It's coming up next right here on the best of Drive Time Sports.
The choice is yours. Sutherland's Friends of the Family Plus Consumer Credit Card lets you choose from 5% off instantly at the register or special financing on qualifying purchases. That means no forms, no waiting, no rebates. You can choose 5% off instantly with your Sutherland's credit card. Got a big project? Choose special financing. The choice is yours with Sutherland's Friends of the Family Plus Consumer Credit Card. Subject to credit approval, minimum monthly payment required. See store for details. Only at Sutherland's.
Tired of your worn-out, dated kitchen cabinets? Painting them is an easy way to make them look new and refresh your entire kitchen. Benjamin Moore Advanced makes painting cabinets a snap. Whether brushed, rolled, or sprayed, Advanced leaves a smooth, durable finish with the added benefit of easy soap and water cleanup. Available in high-gloss, semi-gloss, satin, and matte finishes, and it's available in thousands of famous Benjamin Moore colors, so you are sure to get the perfect color and elegant look your cabinets deserve. Come into Spectrum Paint Supply today, 80 South, 100 West.
As a mom, I felt like my kids were slipping away. I just wanted to spend time with them. But with our fast-paced life, it just wasn't possible. Besides, what kid wants to hang out with their mom? That was until I found the Price Theaters. So now I take time with each of my kids and take them to a movie. No, we can't talk during the movie, but we're together, and the conversation afterwards is the best. So as one busy mom to another, take your kid to the movies tonight. It'll give you things to talk about for a lifetime.
You are listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m.
Time for a history lesson here on Drive Time Sports. I always look forward to bringing in authors here on the show, especially if we're talking baseball. There's just something about the history of the game, right? It just hits different. And today we are going to talk about the 1932 season with author Tom Wolfe. Now, on May 1st, he released his latest book, The Called Shot, Babe Ruth, the Chicago Cubs, and the unforgettable Major League Baseball season of 1932. And Tom is joining us right now over the phone. Tom, a pleasure to get you on today. Thank you again for taking out the time.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here and looking forward to talking about baseball.
Absolutely, absolutely. Baseball conversations are always the best. I think several people would definitely agree with us on that one, Tom. So let's talk about the book. Again, The Called Shot, Babe Ruth, the Chicago Cubs, the unforgettable Major League Baseball season of 1932. Easiest question I'm going to ask you during this segment here, Tom. Why 1932? What was it about this particular season that made you say, okay, I'm going to invest the time into putting a book together on it?
1932 is such a fascinating year, both in baseball history and also American history, that I wanted to kind of merge the two. In terms of the national history, we were in the midst of the Great Depression. There were demonstrations in the streets of the nation's capital. There was an economic crisis. There was a presidential election coming up. The country was in turmoil in many ways, and baseball provided the country and fans a wonderful diversion. It was a splendid season. It had all the elements that one would hope for in a great season: terrific players, great pennant races, an iconic World Series, and Babe Ruth. So what more can you ask for?
No question. And for those who are unaware, 1932 happened to be the last time that we saw Babe Ruth in the World Series. And to add to it, and this is something that I found very interesting in the book, and Tom, I got to be honest, as soon as I got the book, the first thing I did, I moved to the chapter, The Called Shot. I skipped ahead of everything. I had to go read The Called Shot. That was Babe Ruth's first official swing at Wrigley Field. That's fascinating. His first swing, and he sends it over the outfield wall. It's magnificent.
Yeah. Ruth was a showman. He loved the big stage. He knew how to produce in front of an audience. And that's an interesting fact that was the first time he had played at Wrigley Field because, of course, as a member of the Boston Red Sox, he had played in the 1918 World Series against the Cubs. But the Cubs played their home games in 1918 at Comiskey Park. So Ruth was being introduced to Wrigley Field, and he introduced Cub fans to him by hitting a home run in his very first swing at Wrigley Field.
Now, this book also does tackle the debate, did Babe Ruth actually call a shot? And before we get into some of the other aspects of the book in the 1932 baseball season, I got to ask you that question because it depends on who you talk to, right? I mean, Charlie Root, the pitcher that Babe Ruth hit the home run off of, he'd be the first to tell you, look, Babe Ruth did not call his shot. Who was Babe Ruth pointing at, or what was he pointing at when he called his shot in 1932?
He was pointing in different directions, and that's one reason that it's such a mystery and so hard to be definitive about what exactly he was doing or intending to do. He pointed at the Cubs' dugout when the count got to 2-2 and indicated that he had one strike left. And then he kept waving his arms and as if he was pointing in the outfield direction. And then on the 2-2 pitch, the count went to 2-2, he turned to the home plate umpire and said, if Ruth hits the next one over, I'm going to hit it out. So he did predict hitting a home run and did hit it on that shot, on that pitch, but he did not specifically point to the spot where the ball landed.
Tom, when I'm reading this chapter, one of the things that stands out to me today is that even back in 1932, you had athletes that were larger than life, and I think sometimes it's hard for us today to really put in perspective just how popular these guys were, right? So the World Series, this game, first game at Wrigley Field in the World Series, it is sold out. Babe Ruth is larger than life. He steps up to the plate, and Cub fans jeer him like no other, which tells me there's still a lot in common with today's game from a fan's perspective as there was back in 1932. I found that interesting in the book because you were really going into detail about just how Cub fans were really jeering Babe Ruth. He commits an error, and boy, they let him hear about it, right? And so a lot of his showmanship of pointing around, he was playing to the crowd a little bit.
Absolutely. That was Ruth's, one of his great talents was energizing people who were in his presence. And when he took fielding practice before that game in 1932, fans were shouting at him. They were throwing fruit. They threw lemons and oranges at him. It was just an engagement sort of back and forth. I don't know if there's anything comparable to that in today's game. I was at a game in Colorado, seeing the Rockies and the Giants play maybe 8 or 10 years ago, and the fans really got on Barry Bonds. But he didn't really interact with the fans. He just ignored them. And in Ruth's case, Ruth was always responsive to any kind of attention he got, and he loved the attention. It's one of the things, one of the reasons that people loved him so much and were attracted to him, whether or not he was on their team or for their team or competing against their team.
Again, Tom Wolf, our guest right now. He is the author of the book, The Called Shot, Babe Ruth, the Chicago Cubs, and the unforgettable Major League Baseball season of 1932. Tom, I know today you will hear people say they want their sports on one side, they want their politics on the other, but when you really dive deep into The Called Shot and you look at the summer of 1932, boy, baseball played such a huge role in really reshaping America, as you alluded to. I mean, we're talking about the Great Depression. We're talking about social unrest. The country was in a very troubled spot at that moment, and then you can kind of correlate that to what was happening on the baseball field as well. As documented in your book, there were a lot of on-field fights. Boy, it was just a different time, to say the least, wasn't it?
It was, and certainly tensions were very high in the country because of people's fears and uncertainty about the future, and a lot of that spilled over onto the baseball fields. There were lots of on-field fights that had to be broken up by umpiring crews. And, of course, the umpiring crews then were only two and sometimes three umpires at a time umpiring a game. So we had all these fights on the field. And, of course, there's one very memorable fight, which we might talk about later, in which an umpire challenged the entire White Sox team to a fight and got into it and wound up getting beaten up. But you wouldn't have that today. You wouldn't have umpires fighting players today. But you, as you know, all the tensions that existed in the country, were evident on the baseball field also. And of course, because baseball had limited their rosters from 25 players to 23, marginal players were literally playing for their lives, playing for their careers. And so I think there was an element there also. It was not a soft life. If you were, expelled out of the major league, if you went down to the minors or you drifted out of baseball, you had a much different life than if you were a major league player.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the fight with the umpire and the White Sox. Let's talk about that. I believe the date was May 30th, 1932. And with everything that was going down, the White Sox dropped two games of a doubleheader to the Cleveland Indians. And really, throughout the game, the White Sox and this particular umpire exchanged words throughout. Finally, it just boiled over, and the altercation began with Charlie Berry, who was the White Sox catcher, accusing the umpire of missing some crucial calls in the ninth inning. Before you know it, we have an all-out brawl, Tom.
Yeah, that was quite an incident. The umpire was George Moriarty. He had been a player early in the 20th century, played for the Tigers, and actually managed the Tigers for 2 years in the 1920s, and then he became a manager. One of the things that he was noted for as a player was that he never turned down an opportunity to be in a fight. He was a brawler right from the beginning. And in this particular doubleheader, he was the home plate umpire for both games, and there had been bad blood between him and the White Sox that went back a couple of years, actually. When the game ended, Moriarty and the players went out through a tunnel that was common, the common tunnel that led them back to the clubhouse, and the White Sox players kept on him. And he said, well, if you don't like my umpiring, I'll fight you. In fact, I'll fight the whole team.
It's
that was typical of Moriarty. Moriarty had gotten in a fight with Ty Cobb years earlier, and he handed Cobb a bat and said, "I think to make this a fair fight, you need to have a bat." And Cobb actually backed down. And Moriarty was just quite a character. But anyway, under the stands, after this doubleheader between the Indians and the White Sox, a pitcher named Milt Gaston stepped forward and said to Moriarty, "Well, if you're going to fight the whole team, you might as well start with me." So Moriarty, the umpire, threw the first punch, hit Gaston in the jaw, knocked him down. Moriarty broke his hand, and then a number of White Sox players, Charlie Berry included, jumped on Moriarty and beat him up, sent him to the hospital. That's not something that would happen today.
No, absolutely not. And again, it's just more of the craziness that you can read about the 1932 MLB season in Tom Wolfe's book, The Cold Shot, which we are talking about right now. Tom, just going over 1932 and some of the insane things or notable things that had happened. For instance, we talked about Babe Ruth hitting two home runs in his first game at Wrigley Field in Game 3 of the World Series. The New York Yankees sweep the Chicago Cubs. Lou Gehrig was just dominant in this particular season. And when you look at the World Series, you look at everything that's been accomplished since then. We talk about Babe Ruth. We talk about the two home runs. We don't necessarily talk about how dominant Lou Gehrig was in the box, going 529 with three home runs and eight RBIs. It's phenomenal. Doesn't get talked about enough.
Yeah. Gehrig had a way of being overshadowed by Ruth. I guess it was somewhat a difference in personalities, but Gehrig had a fantastic season. He had a four-home-run game, actually, on June 3rd, and that event was actually overshadowed because John McGraw, the longtime manager of the Giants, retired on June 3rd. So here's Gary hitting four home runs, almost hit a fifth, and he's the second-best story of the day. Just as in the 1932 series, as you know, Babe Ruth had one good game out of the four-game series, but Babe Ruth is who we remember and associate with the 1932 World Series, even though Gehrig was really the star. And each time Ruth hit a home run, Gehrig came up to bat behind him and hit another home run.
Yeah, and then some of the other things that had happened in the 32 season, like, I'm a Dodger fan, so when I go back and you study the Dodger history, I mean, the Brooklyn Dodgers, Johnny Fredericks, he had six pinch hit home runs during this season. That's absolutely insane when you think about it. Six times this guy pinched hit, knocked one over the wall. And so, Tom, when you look back at 1932 and all your research that went into the book, outside of Babe Ruth, the Yankees, and the Cubs, was there anything that stands out to you as maybe one of your favorite tidbits of that season?
Well, I suppose there are two, and I'll sort of touch on both of them briefly. One is the shooting of the Cubs shortstop by his girlfriend in the Hotel Carlos right down the street from Wrigley Field. That happened right in the middle of the season, and it was sort of part of the drama of the Cubs year. It was a very traumatic year for the Cubs, and, you know, they wound up in the World Series, but their best hitter, Hack Wilson, was traded in December. Their owner, William Wrigley, died in January. Their rookie shortstop was shot by his girlfriend in July. And then their manager, Rogers Hornsby, who's a significant figure in the book, was their manager up until early August, and then he was dismissed. He was fired partly because players didn't like him and partly because he had serious money problems and gambling debt. So I think the whole of the Cubs season is as dramatic, really, as what happened in the World Series. It's quite remarkable the Cubs got there, considering all the adversity they had to overcome during the season.
And again, you can read about this and more in the book. It's called The Cold Shot: Babe Ruth, the Chicago Cubs, and the unforgettable Major League Baseball season of 1932. And the author is Tom Wolfe, joining us right now on the show. Tom, it has been a pleasure to speak with you on the 1932 Major League Baseball season. Before I let you go, I definitely have to give you an opportunity to talk to the audience and let them know where they can find your book.
You can find the book in independent bookstores. Brick and mortar stores should be carrying it. And, of course, it's online through Barnes & Noble and Amazon. It's available as an ebook, as an audiobook, and as a hard copy.
Tom, it was great to speak with you today. Thank you so much for taking out the time, and best of luck with the book moving forward.
Thanks very much. I really enjoyed the conversation.
As did I. Again, that's Tom Wolf, author of the book The Called Shot, Babe Ruth, the Chicago Cubs, and the unforgettable Major League Baseball season of 1932. Fun conversation, to say the least. Let's take a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
For some children, visiting the dentist for the first time can be a little stressful. Price Pediatric Dental understands and has some tips to ease a child's anxiety. Bring your child in to meet the staff and tour the office before any dental work is done. They can even sit in the dentist chair and have a conversation. This will allow him or her to become familiar with the staff and office environment. Price Pediatric Dental specializes in making sure a child's visit is a positive one. Call to schedule an appointment today at 637-9590.
Remodeling a house can be fun, stressful, exciting, and sometimes cause serious anxiety. Let Nichols Remodeling and Construction help. A company that values their customers, going the extra mile to make sure they're satisfied and the job is done right the first time. Nichols has full-time painters on staff and a custom cabinetry shop. How many other remodeling companies can say that? From tile to excavation, they do it all. Call Jackson Nichols at 630-8687 to schedule an appointment.
What could be better than high school football? And a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. What could be better than an afternoon soccer game? And a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. What could be better than a baseball game? And a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. You get the point, right? Everything is better when you add a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Eating that juicy golden fried chicken and watching your team play live is the best combination ever. Get to KFC before your next game.
You are listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
Let's talk some boxing here on Drive Time Sports. Very sad weekend for the sport. We say goodbye to one of the greatest middleweights and possibly one of the greatest southpaws in the history of the sport of boxing, is Marvelous Marvin Hagler passing away at the age of 66 on Saturday. It was reported by his wife on social media. We're going to talk about the legacy of Hagler, and of course we'll talk about 8 Minutes of Hell, which in my mind, look, we're talking about the greatest first round of boxing in prized fight history. Plus, we'll talk about some of the other news circulating today. We are going to get a super match as far as the heavyweights are concerned. We'll have the titles unified, something that's we've been waiting a while for in the heavyweight division. We'll talk about all that more right now with our boxing insider, Tony Whippy. Tony, always a pleasure to get you on the show. Thank you.
Yeah, it's always great to be here, JB.
Yeah, I wish we were having just a happier conversation today as far as unified championships at the heavyweight division. Unfortunately, the big news in boxing, we say goodbye to Marvelous Marvin Hagler. This happened again on Saturday at the age of 66. Tony, you and I were talking off the cuff. It came out of nowhere. I mean, this would probably be, when you take a look at the boxing legends, knowing the way Hagler walked away, and the help, the perceived help that he had, this was mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, not really a lot of people left the sport like Hagler. I mean, he did do it his way, you know, Frank Sinatra style in that regards, as far as leaving the sport. Now, to get there was a different standpoint. It was quite the opposite for him. He basically walked through fire to get to, the mountaintop, so to speak. Very one of the iconic fighters of the 80s, and at the same time, and nobody saw this coming on Saturday, and it did hit everyone sideways, and it's a huge loss to the sport, and just boxing fans alone are mourning this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, when you talk about boxing in the 80s, for instance, I was born in 86. I grew up with boxing in the 90s. However, I got stories of boxing in the 80s. And anytime you talk about 80s boxing, it was just a different world. And you look at Duran, Leonard, Hagler, Hearns, the middleweight division in itself, Tony, was so unique. And it's something that I really, really hope doesn't get lost on the younger generation. As you and I were talking during the before we hopped on the air during that last break, we were talking about the 8 Minutes of Hell. And I think that's a perfect place to actually start to talk about Hagler's legacy, because not only is that fight iconic, and I think one aspect that not a lot of people are aware of, he only fought two more times after the 8 minutes of hell.
Yeah, so one of the blessings and the curses of the sport is the 8 minutes of hell. It is one of the most iconic, you know, 8 minutes of footage of boxing history. It is so, I mean, any hardcore boxing fan probably watches it, and I mean, at least once a year. It's that, I mean, you watch it constantly because it's amazing to see these two fighters fight the way that they did for that short period of time, yet for that long period of time. You don't see that. And so everyone always, that's the iconic comparison. Like when they say, I wish boxing was like it was in the good old days, they always reference this fight. But that's not every fight in boxing, not even then, let alone now. That's how special that fight was. To get to that point, to before that ring walk, before the entrance, before the even fight was contractually signed, it was something that was big between Hearns, you know, and Emmanuel Stewart and Marvin Hagler, Duba. It is something that you can't duplicate, even though we can try and we can try to reference things. Oh, this is going to be the next Hagler Hearns. You mean next Hagler Hearns? It never is, because there's only one Hagler Hearns fight. For me, I'm a little bit older than you. My first fight was the Mugabe fight, and I saw him destroy him, and I thought that was interesting. And, and then to go into that Leonard fight where, you know, a lot of controversy from many aspects. One, most people, a lot of people think that Leonard kind of waited for Hagler to kind of get a little bit older before he got into that fight. And on the flip side, a lot of people think that Hagler won. I would be one of them. However, some people always make really good arguments for Leonard winning that fight, and I'm not going to, you know, get into semantics on that. This isn't the day to do that. But after that fight, he said, this is it. I'm out. And he wanted nothing to do with that portion of the sport anymore. So the guy was in really entertaining fights all of his career. You've never really seen a left-handed sharpshooter the way he was. And at the same time, his counter left hooks were just mean and gruesome. The guy was just a beast in the ring.
Yeah, he was. And I think, again, in boxing, we focus so heavily on the records, right? Okay, so you start breaking this down. 67 fights, 62 wins, 3 losses, 2 draws. He went about 10 years without losing a fight. Okay, and that loss, as you just alluded to, it was Sugar Ray Leonard, his final fight, where he said, you know what, this is it, I'm done. And I also think that when you go back and you look at the historical significance of that fight, how often, and this goes across every sport, baseball, basketball, football, hockey, it doesn't matter. How often do you see an athlete leave on their own terms? Typically, there is something that leads to an athlete walking away from the sport. Here was Marvelous Marvin, still in fine shape, a guy that, and in my mind, I agree with you, he did win the Sugar Ray Leonard fight, but he just walks away. And he never even flirts with the idea of coming back. He leaves, he becomes an actor, and boxing was just over. With the snap of the fingers, that was it. April 6th, 1987, he walks away at 62-3, Tony.
One of the most important things to really understand Marvin Hagler is the man was built on discipline and principles that most, let alone boxers or humans or men alone, aren't built and designed this way anymore. We talk about, you know, some people fight for fame, some people fight for money, some people fight for legacy. Some people fight just because they have to. You know, in this case, he literally came from nothing and destroyed fighters. I mean, if you want to look at his record and you want to just break down the number of TKOs and KOs that he has, that alone, but he was one of the most feared men in boxing in the early 80s. Where it was extremely hard to get people in the ring with him. If you talk to boxing historians, you talk to boxing promoters, and you talk about people that were trying to build his career, it was extremely difficult to do so because nobody wanted to fight this guy because of how dangerous he was in the ring. Now, you talked about outside the ring, he's one of the gentlest giants in the world. Nice guy, real educated, can actually have a hold a conversation with you, talk to you about anything. He would always talk to people about investments, how to build, you know, one of the things you need to do is build real estate, so on and so forth. So when we do talk about the tailor end of his career, he didn't have to keep fighting. You know, he was wise with the money that he made. He was always doing well things outside of the ring as well, being a true ambassador to the sport. Now, there was always talk, you know, hey, you know, we offered him money, we offered him money. He never batted an eye of actually doing it because he basically felt, you know, shunned, if you will, on the Leonard fight and said he wanted no part of it. Other fighters would go on and take exhibition fights if they wanted to for funsies. Hagler was not that type of man.
Again, Tony Whippy, our guest right now as we talk about boxing and, again, the life and legacy of Marvelous Marvin Hagler passing away at the age of 66 over the weekend. Tony, let's move on and talk about the news that broke earlier today. We are going to have a unified heavyweight champion of the world. Boy, it's been a long time since we've been able to say something like that. But after months of negotiations, we finally get the best fight that boxing could make in my mind right now, and that's Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua. To me, it's the best fight. It was at one point in time. I was aching for a Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence. I no longer want that, at least not at the moment. I need to see Spence in the ring a couple of more times before I can say that is the most prominent fight to be made. Right now, in my mind, it is Fury, it is Joshua, and we're going to get a two-fight deal out of this entire thing, which is it's fantastic. It's great for the sport of boxing.
100%. This is great for the sport of boxing, and this is without a doubt going to be the biggest fight in recent history since, you know, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. This is a global fight, yet this is a hardcore UK fight as well. It rings fun. You know, you have the Tyson Fury. A lot of people look at him as the linear champion. A lot of people look at him as being, you know, the goofier guy, likes to have fun inside the ring, outside the ring, but he is a very tactical, strategic fighter inside the ring. Then you have, you know, the Olympian, Anthony Joshua, you know, built like an Adonis Greek god, you know, can do some very good damage in the ring. But since he, you know, fought Klitschko, have been a little bit hesitant, got taken down a post with the Andy Ruiz fight, and, you know, is really trying to reclaim at this point. And it's going to be fun. I'm excited about it. I think it's going to do huge numbers financially. It's good for business and boxing, and it's good for the sport. And I love the fact that, let me put it this way. The fact that they're saying it's a two-fight deal is saying, look, no matter what happens, we're going to get this done if there's any controversy. I like that portion of it. Yet at the same time, it kind of just says, well, we're already looking at fight two as opposed to what's going to happen in fight one.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I love about it, and it's very basic because, again, you've got to remember, for those who are unaware, you have two different promotion companies trying to come together to make this fight. It is similar to what happened with Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. The first fight's going to call for a 50-50 split in the purse, and the second fight is 60-40, with the 60% going to the winner of the first fight. Boy, Tony, that's freaking simple, isn't it, when we're talking about boxing matches and all these obstacles that prevent this kind of stuff from happening. A two-fight deal with the winner getting a 60-40 purse in the second fight, boy, this is genius.
Yeah, absolutely. I think stylistically this is a fun fight. I think this is one of those fights where it's going to start off a little slow, and I would argue probably the first five rounds may not look the most entertaining, but I think as time goes on in this fight, you know, rounds probably 7, 8, and 9, I think we're going to see kind of the strategy of both men kind of clash and come together, whether it's, you know, the comfortability, whether it's the anxiety, whatnot. I just think overall, we haven't had two top heavyweights of this magnitude, you know what I mean? And this many belts on the line, so on and so forth, and just stylistically and idealistically be matched up together in a really long time. And that's what makes this fun. And quite, I mean, we could have been doing this the last 4 or 5 years. It's just, you know, boxing business gets in the way of boxing fights. That's just the nature of boxing itself. Sometimes it's fun, sometimes it's good. Most of the time it's angering and dissatisfying, but it's nice to hear news like this. Let's just help make sure that it comes into fruition before we get too happy about it.
Well, correct. You are correct. And I do want to point out that over the last few years, we've been talking about the big three in the heavyweight division, and you and I agreed wholeheartedly, and it was nothing against Deontay Wilder, but out of the big three, these were the top two in the sport in the heavyweight division. There's no question about it. I mean, I don't want to disrespect Deontay Wilder because I always root for the American. I always do. I'm open about that. With that being said, he is nowhere near the level of these two, and we know this.
Yeah, I mean, Wilder's always been, you know, the joker card. You know what I mean? He's always been that wild card where, in that sense, you don't know what's going to happen, whether good or bad. In recent years, it has not panned out well for him, and that's why he's, you know, coming to that lower echelon as opposed to coming and rising to the top. Now, you could argue what's interesting about all three of these men, if we're going to keep Wilder in the mix, which is not necessary, but just in general, all three of these men have had some sort of tribulations in the ring, had some sort of downturns. However, Fury's hasn't been remotely close to as devastating as the other ones, and he's somewhat always can't prevailed. I mean, even when they're on the fight with Wilder, where he was knocked down, we talked about how he got up where nobody thought he'd be able to get up and survive that fight. And some people, a lot of people did think that he still won that fight, even with the knockdown. I know I did, and I believe even you did as well. Maybe I'm misspeaking.
I had it a draw.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, that being said, Joshua, you know, has lost. You know, he did not look his greatest against Klitschko. He went through the fire and still won that fight. And then again, the huge upset against Andy Ruiz, where Wilder has never been able to take out Fury. So in this case, you know, Fury's, you know, next man up. He advanced. Joshua's back on the warpath. These guys were bound to clash at some point. It should happen sooner rather than later, and not let it die in the vine like a Spence Crawford fight.
Yep, we're definitely getting it to get a two-fight deal. It looks like maybe we get one this summer and the other one coming towards the end of the year of 2021. We'll have to wait and see. A venue has not been secured yet, but it does appear that the Middle East would be the most likely spot for this fight to happen, the biggest fight to be made in the sport of boxing. Again, Tony Whippy, our guest right now. Tony, it was a pleasure to get you on the show. I always look forward to the conversations. Thank you once again, and I know we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Your car, you depend on it to get your family where they need to go. But as a busy mom, the last thing you need is more stress or worry. So leave your car care to the experts at Gray Coast Tire Pros. They're more than just tires. They've got your entire vehicle maintenance covered, from brakes and oil changes to an AC recharge and so much more. Gray Coast will make sure your car is in top shape to keep up with your schedule. Nothing slows you down faster than car problems. Keep yours running smooth with Gray Coast Tire Pros, where everything rolls around you.
Desert View Federal Credit Union is here to help you get started on managing your finances better with their low-interest debt consolidation loan. Minimum payments made to several different high-interest credit cards are not going to get you debt-free very quickly. Come into a Desert View branch today and let them help you get your debt consolidated into one easy, low-interest payment. Get control of your debt and your finances and come into Desert View Federal Credit Union today.
Membership and eligibility apply. Loans on approved credit. Member NCUA.
Cleaning house is so time-consuming. You can rush all over the house making sure everything is dust-free, mopping floors, vacuuming carpets, even scrubbing sinks. But no matter how clean the rest of the house is, if you have dirty blinds, your house cleaning isn't done. Call CleanTech Cleaning and Restoration. CleanTech uses an ultrasonic cleaning method that will eliminate dust and static cling. Let CleanTech pick up your blinds today, and you'll have one less chore. Call 650-1933 today for an appointment.
You are listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
In 5, 4, 3, 2...
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Zero name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave. Zero name, no gimmicks. That's why I ain't got no.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. Excited to bring in our next guest. Well-known coach throughout the country, Martin Rooney, also an author. He's penned 9 books, and his latest hit bookstore shelves in March. It's called Coach to Coach, an empowering story about how to be a great leader. And there's a foreword at the beginning of this book by Phil Sims. I think you'll really enjoy this, especially if you have any interest in coaching kids. A lot of endorsements on this book from some high-profile athletes and coaches as well. Joining us right now again, Martin Rooney over the phone. Martin, a pleasure. Thank you for the time.
Hey, my pleasure, and for all the listeners out there, I hope everybody is safe, and I'm hoping that we pump you up a little bit today.
Yeah, definitely. You're definitely a great speaker. And of course, for those who don't know who Martin is, once we're done with this interview, I definitely encourage you to check out some of Martin's work on YouTube. You can see Martin actually speak in the empowerment. Martin, let's talk. First off, I want to get an introduction for you. For those who don't know who Martin Rooney is, I mentioned you have trained some of the greatest athletes in the world. If it's NFL, if it's UFC, Major League Baseball, NBA, Olympians, you have trained some of the best athletes in the world. So give me a background on what you bring to the table from a resume standpoint.
Well, wow. Well, hey, I'll keep it brief, but I was originally an orthopedic therapist. Interesting. I lived out in Utah for a while because I was on the U.S. bobsled team, too. And using those two experiences, I wanted to take fitness and sport to the next level. And I got an opportunity to work with hundreds of NFL combine guys and then coach in the NFL for a number of years. And then I was lucky to be one of the first coaches ever for UFC and MMA fighters. And that led to books, and those books led to seminars, and those seminars led to now hundreds of Training for Warriors facilities around the world that are helping 10,000 people a day still, even in this crisis, to improve not only their external fitness, but their internal health too.
Yeah, when you talk about being a coach at the Combine, you talk about UFC and having these centers throughout the country. Give me a couple of names, some of the guys that maybe inspired you a little bit. You were coaching them, but you found inspiration from some of these athletes, some well-known athletes. Can you think of a few?
Absolutely. Well, hey, right off the bat, Phil Simms, who wrote the foreword for my new book, he was a training partner and, you know, Super Bowl MVP, and I had the opportunity not only to train his sons, but almost become part of the family. And as a result of that, he had so many great lessons for me over the years of all the things that he had learned. And then, obviously, what comes to mind is Henzo Gracie of the Gracie family, where he gave me my opportunity to, again, be part of their family and get on board with the UFC before it was even a well-known sport. And it really allowed me to build the organization that I have today. And another one that really sticks out is Howie Long's son, Chris Long, who when I worked with him, he was second pick overall in the NFL draft, went on to an amazing career, two Super Bowl championships, NFL Man of the Year, and we're still in touch today. And, you know, if anybody knows, he gave away his salary his final year to help education in America. So some really great things where not only was I the coach, but sometimes I was the student too.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up Chris Long, because in doing research for the interview today, I came across your relationship with Chris Long. And in fact, he gives you quite the endorsement, I know, at the beginning of the book. And this is a guy that I absolutely admire. I mean, you talk about being the second pick in the NFL draft. He goes to the St. Louis Rams. I mean, that was a really hard time, I guarantee, in his career, playing for a team that was underachieving year in and year out. And then he has success towards the end of it. But you mentioned the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, which is just fantastic. I mean, that's what you play the game for, right? So when you talk about these athletes that you've had this interaction with and you've had the ability to coach, it kind of all comes to fruition, right, with the new book, Coach to Coach.
Yeah, well, actually, what happened was I started to see that it wasn't about the exercises that I was teaching or what I knew about the sports. It was how I was connecting with them and getting them to do the things they knew they should be doing. And I started teaching courses around the world on coaching instead of fitness. And everybody kept saying, you got to write this book. You got to write this book. And finally, I sat down to it. I sent it into the top publishing house, Wiley. And I was expecting my rejections, but nope. In one day, they said this is the best one they've read, and they got to have it. And they fast-tracked it. And, you know, for, hey, whether we think it's tough or not, it just came out in this last month. But I think I could never have predicted how important the message would be for people right now.
I promise the listeners, when you pick up the book and you just see the endorsements right off of the gate, right out of the gate from some of the coaches, Lou Holtz was one that stood out to me, Martin, right out of the gate. Lou Holtz talking about how inspiration it's going to be. You're going to learn a thing or two when you read this book. And there's a million of them right as you get started. So give me the basis of the book and some of the, I guess, the little tidbits that you made sure had to go in from what you've picked up over the last, well, however long it's been, decades that you've been coaching.
Sure. Well, hey, like you mentioned, first off, hey, you know, Lou Holtz, coaches like Dan Gable and Rudy from the movie Rudy said it's like the best story he's read. And why I say that is this book is not a textbook. It is a story. It's done in the classic parable or fable model, but to teach really important lessons. And that's why I think so many people are connecting with it, because it's an easy read, something people are getting through quick and getting a sense of accomplishment, but really leaving with some important lessons. And in particular, I think the biggest one right off the bat is everyone has learned right now that everyone is a coach. Whether you're a mom, dad, husband, wife, brother, sister, teammate, coworker, you're there to coach somebody else. And if you don't know how to do it as well as you could, this book has those answers. And I guess maybe one of the most powerful ones that I can share that I think everybody reads needs right now is what I call the five most powerful words a coach can say, and that is, I am proud of you. And right now, more than ever, I think people need to hear that from the people that they think are their coaches. And if the book just gets more people to do that, it will have done its job.
Again, our guest right now is Martin Rooney. He is the author of the new book, Coach to Coach. Martin, before we continue to talk about other aspects of the book, I did read an interview with you that was done a little bit before the book was released, if I remember correctly. And I think this will definitely, I think this we can connect this to a lot of people specifically in this area. You've coached some of the greatest athletes in the world, but you said in this interview that you learned the most and felt like you made the biggest impact when you were coaching youth sports, high school athletics.
Yeah, absolutely. And hey, this is a message out to everyone out there that's either a youth coach, middle school coach, high school coach. I believe you are the unsung heroes. I am a high school track coach now. I was the middle school track coach in our town for years. I've spent more time. It's great to talk about all the big famous names and the Olympic gold medals and world champs, but I've spent more of my time coaching high school athletes, and I believe that's where the biggest impacts are made. And when people ask me, who do you think are the greatest coaches, Martin? Well, I say they're the ones you're never going to have heard of. They're the moms and the dads and these youth coaches that created that spark and inspired that passion into the person that eventually goes on to be the superstar that we hear about. So without a doubt, I learned more from coaching younger athletes because that's where they had to be molded. That's where the real impact was made. And those stories are what I share in Coach to Coach.
I know it's a very vague question, but I got to ask you, turning your natural skills and talents into your own unique coaching style, that's very vague. What do you mean by that? And give me an example of some of the success stories that you have seen from someone who maybe had a difficult time relating the idea of being a coach, but used their own personal skills, someone that you've talked to that has now evolved as a coach using their own personal skills.
Yeah, well, I guess what I meant by that is everybody has a different style. So, you know, this book is not, oh, when someone does this, you do that. And hey, as everybody can probably hear, I'm a pretty enthusiastic guy. That doesn't mean you have to be veins in your neck on fire and that's the only way you can coach somebody up. So what I mean is whether someone is an introvert or an extrovert, there are specific skills that you need to use or the coach has to have in order to make that connection to hold someone accountable. And what I'm talking about there is whether it be your empathy or even your expertise, the knowing of what you're supposed to be coaching, these are all critical things. But an example that obviously comes to mind would be, hey, I've watched coaches that are much quieter, coaches that do not yell or have to give a tremendous pep talk, but they still make an incredible connection with those athletes and then get that end result. So ultimately what I'm saying here is there are a lot of ways to skin the cat when we're talking about coaching, but there are a lot of principles about coaching that if you want to be great, you have to have them. And that's what I tried to outline in Coach to Coach.
I know you mentioned Phil Simms, of course, gives the foreword to this, and I have read the foreword, and it's fantastic right off of the bat to get something out of Phil Simms. You mentioned how close you were to Phil. What did that mean to you to have Phil write this, put this in the book, and really in the terms that he used, talking about the impact that you have had and how he wanted you to coach his kids? I mean, that speaks volumes.
Yeah, well, it was not only is it humbling, but really it's a reminder of the importance of developing relationships as a coach. And for me to have gained his trust and then the kids' trust, where they both went on to be NFL players, it's amazing. And I'm still in touch with all of them today. So coaching, ultimately, it's this reminder about relationships. And this is very important, too. The coach isn't there to get a pat on the back. The coach is there to give one. And you know what? 20 years later, after all the pats on the back I gave, you know what? I got one back from those guys. And I think that's what it's about, that coaching is a service and you got to give. And four words really come to mind, and that is, it's about others, or, you know, it is about others. And a lot of times I need coaches to understand that you are there to help somebody else, not to be put on a pedestal. And you know what? That forward not only hammered home that I've been doing it right for a long time, but again, it was a testament to all the hard work and effort that someday will come back to repay you.
Martin Rooney, again, our guest right now. We are talking about his latest book. It was released in March. It's called Coach to Coach, an empowering story about how to be a great leader. Martin, this is probably a really basic, ridiculous question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Define a leader for me and for the listeners. What is a leader?
Wow. Well, yeah, that was a tough one. But I guess what I would say is, you know, and using the idea from the book, a leader is someone who takes somebody where they want to go, inspires them to take the actions and holds them accountable to get there. And, I've tried to, instead of taking a very complex idea where obviously I've got hundreds of books on leadership on my shelves, that would pretty much be it, that the leader is there to inspire, to get the best out of someone else, to take them and everybody else where they really want to go. And that would be the best one I could do on the spot like that.
Yeah, I know. It's a very vague, tough question. I appreciate you answering that. I have to point out that you have written many books before Coach to Coach. In fact, you have 9 now to your name. Is that correct?
Yes, but Coach to Coach was a departure from some of those other books, where the original books I did were fitness and exercise-based, which, hey, they sold hundreds of thousands of copies in multiple languages around the world. But I really wanted to do something that would connect with a larger audience, something that was universal for everyone. And now with the thousands of books that are already out there and the emails that I'm receiving from men and women from all walks of life, I know with Coach to Coach, I hit the mark.
No question about it. Again, Martin Rooney, our guest right now. Martin, it's been a pleasure to chat with you over the last 15 minutes or so. Before I let you go, you got to give me all the basic information about the book, where you can get it, and of course, your presence online, because, well, you're everywhere. If you want to watch Martin speak, if you just want to read, I mean, wherever, you can find tons of Martin Rooney online.
Yeah, so if anybody does a Google search, you'll find me. But, hey, I'm on Instagram as TheMartinRooney. Everybody can find me on social media and Facebook, where I'm always putting information out there. But if anybody would like the newsletters that I put out on a weekly basis that are helping tens of thousands of people, you can go to trainingforwarriors.com to check that out. And, hey, Coach to Coach, it's through Wiley Publishing. The best place to get it is on Amazon. That's where everybody around the world is getting it now. And they'll have it to your door in a couple of days. And I promise it won't even take you a couple more to read it. And I'm hoping this book will not only be a great gift to the listener, but also something they go back to again and again like an old friend.
Well, Martin, it was definitely a pleasure to get you on the show. Thank you again for taking out the time, and I'm definitely looking forward to reading the book now that I have my copy. I really appreciate everything, and especially your time.
My pleasure, and hey, I know you're going to love it. I'm looking forward to hearing from you what you think.
Definitely looking forward to speaking with you again as soon as I finish the read. Again, that's Martin Rooney joining us here on Drive Time Sports.
This is Eastern Utah's news and weather station, 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, KOAL, Price.